From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump has said he is considering using an executive order to include a question about citizenship on the 2020 U.S. Census, past the deadline for printing, and even after a Supreme Court ruling denying him the right. Claiming that Chief Justice John Roberts offered a legal opening for the government to reopen the case, Trump's Justice Department is also readying a new legal fight and abruptly replaced its lawyers working on the case. The government's pretext for the citizenship question has changed several times. Officials claimed it was about proper enforcement of the Voting Rights Act, then said it was about redistricting and also about dealing with the, quote, burden of undocumented immigrants. It seems that the battle over the census is turning out not only to be a test of how far the Republican Party will go to maintain its power, but also how far the president can push the limits of executive power. My guest is Stephen Rosenfeld, editor and chief correspondent and senior writing fellow for Voting Booth, a project of the Independent Media Institute. Welcome, Stephen.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So first, let's talk about what Trump can actually do using an executive order to force this question on the census. Seems like a thoroughly unprecedented thing. Can he actually do that? Does he have the right to simply do this via executive order?
Well, it remains to be seen, because if this is new territory, as you have said. He is the chief executive of that branch of the government. But of course, there will be all kinds of litigation. So the question really is, it's all new territory. But, you know, what we're seeing, though, is not necessarily unprecedented in terms of the Republicans' voter suppression, voter confusion, voter chaos, and, you know, power plays. So, you know, we can get into that step by step. But he may very well do that. He may get pushback from the Justice Department, against the Justice Department. It remains to be seen.
So in replacing the lawyers that had been working on this case, you know, which went to the Supreme Court, there is a lot of speculation that the Justice Department is, or at least some elements of the Justice Department, is quite confused, unhappy, and sort of unwilling to go forward with restarting the litigation. That's what some legal experts are saying. Do you think that that's what it could be?
Oh, absolutely. That's what it could be. You know, I've been reading the election law blogs. These are the law professors and the people who, you know, they cycle in and out of these federal, you know, agencies with different presidencies and different parties. And basically, Trump is fishing. The administration is fishing for an argument. They're fishing for a justification. And the Supreme Court gave them some directions as far as like where they could go. What they basically said was, well, if you didn't lie to us about this Voting Rights Act thing and you cited a partisan reason, then perhaps we would have let it go through, because they basically made a decision with gerrymandering, which is the drawing of districts, which comes out of the census process, that you cannot restrict these political line drawings on a partisan basis. You can restrict them on a racial basis. And that's, of course, gets tied into a little bit of what they were arguing beforehand. So what's happening is they're searching for arguments. They're fishing. And we don't know what's going to end up. And, you know, what these lawyers have said is the federal courts take themselves very seriously. The federal judges don't like it when defendants come in and basically lie or say, hey, we argued this, but now we're doing that. And we want you to ignore what we said in the past because we've got a better case to present here. So it's really up in the air. But I should say that, you know, creating confusion has been one of the Trump's strategies from day one, especially around immigration issues. I mean, you know, so just think of how many times we have heard about raids that will come and then raids that we're not going to. That didn't happen, but we're pulled back. And you know, if you think about the history of voter suppression tactics, you know, this is very, very similar. You always raise the specter that something will be over policed or something like that, and to discourage participation. And discouraging participation is what this is all about. Whether it's discouraging or using the levers of the law to, you know, to exclude.
So half the battle may already be won by the Republicans and sowing fear about the information that they will gather. But I want to just go back to what you were saying earlier about searching for a pretext. It seems as though courts would not generally take kindly to a case that, you know, first claims one argument and then comes back and claims a second one and then comes back and claims a third one. The Washington Post actually had a piece entitled "The Trump Administration Has Changed Its Story on the Census Citizenship Question at least 10 times in 4 months." And we also saw recently the organization Common Cause found in a work that it was doing, I believe on gerrymandering, documents from a Republican strategist, now deceased, that showed very clearly that adjusting the census to ask citizenship question would benefit the Republicans. People said it was too late to influence the Supreme Court when it made its first ruling. But shouldn't that come into play? And shouldn't the government's search for pretexts come into play if this case is relitigated?
Well, it will come into play. And there's more than one census case that's out there. And what's going to happen and has been happening is that, you know, the courts are, you know, federal judges are not dummies. And they can see through the transparency on this. But what ends up happening, and this is where it really comes down to, is, you know, we have to keep, what is the big picture here? The big picture here is that what the Republicans have been doing, and they've been doing this for this entire decade, and it started after Obama's election, where they very aggressively tried to identify in more than a dozen states, something like 150 state legislative districts, where they thought they went in and campaigned really hard with really aggressive negative campaign ads, they could take back those state legislatures and have red state majorities. And they did. So then what happened was they basically started redrawing political districts. Now, this is not for statewide office. This is not for governor. This is not for U.S. senator. But this is for the U.S. House, and it's for state legislatures. And what they ended up doing was they ended up segregating likely voters. So what does that really mean? It means that in states that basically have 50-50 or thereabouts, you know, these purple political complexions, if you draw lines and you look at, basically they took McCain voters from 2008, a year the Republicans got trounced, and they drew districts, they drew boundaries where they would win. The Republicans would win with 54, 55, 56% of likely voter turnout. And the Democrats, they called it cracking and packing, the lines were drawn so that they would typically win in these states with a nearly 70% turnout, 68, 69, 70%. So what states are we talking about? We're talking about Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, Texas. What you have here is, you know, time marches on. The courts have been presented with all kinds of litigation on how this is fair or not fair. And, you know, Democrats and people working for voting rights groups have made all kinds of arguments based on a moral compass. This is anti-democratic. But it really comes down to two thresholds. Is it a race-based gerrymander or is it partisan? And, you know, when we're talking about the South, race and party are synonymous.
Exactly, right.
So what's happened is before Gorsuch was seated on the Supreme Court made a decision in North Carolina affecting two congressional districts, saying this was spring 2017, saying this is a race-based gerrymander. You got to go back and redraw this stuff. But what's ended up happening is the makeup of the Supreme Court has changed. And in that decision, by the way, Alito basically said, hey, you know, this is all partisan. We should not get our hands dirty. We got to stay above this. This is, you know, the perfect states' rights pretext. You know, leave them alone. Let them do what they want. You know, we'll just – and this is not a new debate, by the way. And so what's happened since then is the Supreme Court has basically run out the clock, and because they know that the census is coming up.
Right.
And
they know there are some hard deadlines here.
Right. So what's happening is they can run out the clock because they can say, hey, the political process is going to start all over again. But what are we talking about here with numbers? Because let's think about what the scale here is, because you can really quantify this stuff. It's amazing. So if you look after the 2012 election was when the Republicans came back with their new maps And Obama got reelected with about a 5 million vote national popular vote majority. And in the House, the Democrats got something like a 1.2, 1.3 million more votes nationwide than Republicans. But because of those maps, they won 33 more House seats. And that led to the majority that basically was trying to trash Obamacare and, you know, everything we've been reporting about for years and years and years. Well, an academic said about 22 or 24 of those seats were due to these extreme gerrymanders. So if you fast forward to today, you know, what did those what was that starting line advantage? It's basically 8%. That's what the smart statisticians and political number data, you know, scientists say. So what happened after that? Those states passed all the voter ID laws, and that peeled off another 2 or 3% of likely turnout. And again, it's through fear-based tactics. You know, you don't have the right ID. So what ends up happening is we come to 2018 and we have a blue wave election. And we're seeing all these polls that say, oh, the Democrats are ahead by 15, 20%. But when come election day, they did win, but they didn't win by 15 or 20%. They generally won by, you know, 3, 4, 5%. Why? Because there was that starting line structural advantage baked into this. So now, what's the impact of asking the census question, you know, on the next generations or the next, you know, map making that's going to start next year? Well, academics say in the state, these are academic demographers, they say in the blue states with the highest concentrations, you know, of people who don't have visas, you know, and are living here and working here and paying taxes here, by the way, also, that upwards of 7% or 8% in those areas may not get counted. So what does that mean? It means that, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in federal aid for the kinds of programs that might support those communities might not get delivered because it's allocated on a per capita basis. And then it also means for political representation. So here again, if you step back, what you're really talking about is, you know, the Republicans know that demographically they are losing, and they're going to become a minority party, but they're doing everything they can to segregate voters. And by the way, this counting of are you or are you not a citizen, it's only the first step and the Republicans are very open about this. You know, all this is legal. It's not moral. But it's legal. It's what they, if they win on that question, what they're going to then argue, this is really extraordinary, is they should only count what they call the citizen voting age population. So who does that exclude? That also excludes children.
Right.
That, you know, so, and there again, you know, you have the whole Republican, oh, the welfare state, you know, blah, 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 blah. So this is what's really going on. And the people who brought this, by the way, this did not come out of nowhere. The people who have developed this line of legal thinking, this, which I think is abhorrent, really, because it's so anti-participatory and, are the same people who have filed the litigation. You know, that basically overturned affirmative action in state universities.
And yet we were supposed to believe that they wanted to enforce the Voting Rights Act properly, which was the initial pretext, right?
Well, you know, people will say anything in politics. You have to look at what they do, not right. What they say. And so this is where we are. And this is the moment. And it's, you know, we're talking about segregating. This is the 21st century, segregating voters.
So if the Supreme Court were to turn around and say, we've run out the clock, the political process has already started, it's too late, Trump is claiming that there could be some sort of addendum to the census because the deadline passed. And so as far as I understand, the census, the people who print the census have begun printing the census or they will not be ready in time. Is Trump going to go to any lengths possible to make this happen because he knows how advantageous it is to the party? I mean, can he even just add an extra piece of questioning to the census asking about citizenship information?
Well, I think the answer is yes. I mean, suppose everything is printed as it's printed now, and suppose one additional page is printed and delivered to the people who have to start, you know, knocking on doors a couple months from now. That seems eminently achievable, you know, from a pure, you know, nuts and bolts, you know, can it be done standpoint. But you know, you know, he's got an uphill legal fight because, as you noted, you know, they've been caught changing their arguments so many times. But, you know, this is the thing. People may not respect Trump, and Nancy Pelosi certainly doesn't respect Trump, but she certainly respects the power of the presidency and the executive branch, and there's tremendous power there. You know, if the executive branch could be stopped with these detention centers and all these other immigration policies by virtue of, you know, congressional will or public outrage, it would have been stopped. But they don't have to care.
Right. I mean, it seems as though in Trump's world, there is no hard and fast boundary that cannot be broken to satisfy his whims. I mean, the census is required by the Constitution, and Trump was willing to delay it. He even talked about, you know, being able to delay the census, the actual carrying out of the census, which, you know, is something that is utterly unprecedented. So the other excuse that that maybe came closest to indicating what the Republican Party's reasoning was, or Trump's reasoning was, for the citizenship question, was mentioned by acting ICE director Ken Cuccinelli, who claimed that it was about dealing with the burden of undocumented immigrants. He then sort of made it really clear, backpedal, and said, no, it's not. It's just aggregate information, not individualized information. It's not about using the data to go after undocumented immigrants. Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, also said that. However, we know that, again, these boundaries won't stop them. There's just news on Sunday about how ICE agents have been found accessing the data of driver's license data using facial recognition technology in three states that allow undocumented immigrants to get driver's licenses: Vermont and Utah and the state of Washington. And no legislative body has authorized them accessing that information, and they're doing it anyway. So there's no way to trust that there will be any kind of a firewall between information that the census gets and how the government uses it.
Yeah, it's very hard to give that assurance. I mean, as you just pointed out, it's demonstrably impossible. And yet, you know, we shouldn't just say Trump about this, because really, we're talking about something that is really baked in the DNA of the Republican Party. And, it certainly preceded Trump. I mean, it was Karl Rove's plan in 2008 and 2010 after Obama got elected. It was called Red Map. And they executed, you know.
This was the gerrymandering,
And if you think about all the red state litigation, and even stuff, you know, that we've lived with and reported on in the past decade, whether it was on Obamacare or LGBT rights or reproductive rights, or, I mean, just, you know, pick, you know, expanding Medicaid, pick an issue. It all, you know, originated in these states where basically there was this, you know, there was a little bit of an internal political coup. You know, power is never neat, and political, you know, politics is never tidy. But, you know, this is pretty aggressive stuff, and it's only getting more aggressive. And so I'm saying it's not just Trump. It's Mitch McConnell saying we're not going to approve, you know, Obama's, or even consider his last Supreme Court nominee. And, you know, and then you have other things where you have these states that are very much purple, where the state Supreme Court in Wisconsin, in North Carolina, where they had controversial elections obtaining a Republican or conservative majority, are now issuing these legislatures after Election Day, where their lame duck sessions are limiting the newly elected Democratic governors. And these state Supreme Courts are ratifying that. So all of this is pretty nasty stuff. And what's happening is the Supreme Court is saying, hey, this is just politics. We can't touch it because it's partisan. And honestly, if you go back in our history, it wasn't always that way. I mean, people may forget that, but it wasn't always that way. This is a new Supreme Court, and it's going to maybe be with us for decades.
Right. So given the makeup of the Supreme Court, which is also, of course, a Republican Party project to remake the country, given the fact that Trump will try to push ahead no matter what, and that half the battle is just scaring the vulnerable parts of our population, what do you think needs to happen now? Because progressive organizations, those who are working on, citizen groups that are working on equitable funding for social programs, and those who, you know, are pro-democracy organizations, is the next task between now and the census starting to have a massive public education campaign to try to undo those the fear mongering.
Well, the most important thing that I think that anyone can do is in the activist community, and there are, and believe me, a lot of people are awake to this in Democratic Party circles, it is working to elect more Democrats to state legislatures or as governor, you know, in 2020, because otherwise what's going to happen is There's going to be no veto pen when it comes to these maps. So, for example, you know, Eric Holder, you know, Obama's former attorney general, says, I don't know if it's true or not, that, you know, they can get a majority in one of the chambers in Texas. Now, that would really be something. Because what's happening is, against that backdrop, we're seeing the same old catalog of, you know, basically dirty tricks. You had the Secretary of State of Texas say, oh my gosh, there's 100,000 people, mostly non-whites, illegally registered. It was completely made up.
Right.
And he got caught with that. Now what's happening, you know, in other states, for example, Georgia, which, you know, is probably the worst example of, you know, you can find more examples of modern voter suppression there in real time than any other state right now. What are they doing? A lot of the people who came, who were refugees from Puerto Rico and registered to, and these are citizens, by the way, and got their driver's licenses in Georgia, they're not having their voter registrations processed in time or in a timely manner. So, and that happened, by the way, last fall, 300,000 in Arizona, 200,000 in Missouri, same thing. It's like data suppression, you know, the intentional roadblock. So this is the kind of thing we're seeing. And the only remedy is actually to try to, you know, take, you know, break these, what they call trifectas, which is, you know, lower and upper legislative chambers and governor's mansions held by one party. Hmm. And that's, you know, that's very, very real. And the numbers that came out of 2018 suggest that if that momentum holds, you know, it might happen. Otherwise, we're basically stuck with another repeat of the same decade we've been living under, where, you know, everything that concerns us the most, you know, whether it's, you know, it's, you know, racial justice, social justice, environmental justice, just, you know, reproductive rights, everything is just going to, you know, the same old, that we're going to continue and waste another 10 years of our lives. Mm.
Stephen, give out a website where people can find out more about the work that you do and read your writings.
Well, yes, I'm with the Independent Media Institute, and you know they have a page where they post the stuff that I write about. And what I mostly have been writing about has been, where will we find a believable evidence trail for counting votes at the finish line as we head into 2020? That has been my thing, because I know that the Republicans are not going to go quietly into the night, to put it mildly.
Right.
And part of that is looking at what the Democrats are going to be introducing in some of their early nominating caucuses, where some of the systems that a lot of people have worried about for a long time are basically going to be tried out in small, but they could be statistically significant magnitude, you know, in Iowa and Nevada, number one and number three. There's going to be online voting, and there's going to be voting by phone, and there's going to be online tabulation systems going back to the caucuses. It's never been tried before. The vendors are running the show. The state party officials are very defensive. They don't want to be criticized. They don't want to look at examples elsewhere where things might not have gone wrong. I'm not talking about for Russia reasons. I'm talking about users get confused. There's not enough people on a helpline. And then, my gosh, how do you have a believable evidence trail if, with such a crowded field, if somebody can test the results? So that's the kind of stuff I've been writing about.
Well, Stephen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
My guest has been Steven Rosenfeld. He is an editor and chief correspondent and senior writing fellow for Voting Booth, a project of the Independent Media Institute. We've been discussing the latest in the fight over Census 2020. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.